Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I am so excited. We have an amazing guest here today. My guest here is Sarah. And actually, I was going to say Sarah Cirilla, but you said Sarah Delaney. Is it Sarah Delaney?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Sarah okay.
Delaney. You can Sarah call me Delaney. Cirilla.
I just get it. But Sarah is, the reason I say that is because she is the founder of Cirilla, which is an alcohol-free organic beverage company that features Rwandan tea and other functional ingredients. And it's created to offer a more inclusive social experiences and improve the global supply system. And I'm going to let her share like full story. We're going to dive into all the details of like how it even came about and why this beautiful drink called Cirilla. So Sarah, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's great to connect with another Asheville woman.
Yes. And that's the other thing too, y'all. We are both in this amazing city we call Asheville, our home. And we have so many badass entrepreneurs and business owners here. And it's beautiful. So I'm so happy we do get to connect today.
It's true. It is a great home base for creativity and building really fun things. So yeah, it's been cool to spend so much time here and just connect with a lot of other entrepreneurs and brand builders and even consumer products, you know, the category I'm in. It just a lot opened up, I think, the past few years to build this tribe.
Ooh, I'm excited to hear even more because you're obviously in on that, in that area of entrepreneurship and brand building. Okay, so Sarah, let's like start first. I would love for you to share with our listeners like about you. Just give us like when you're meeting somebody, like give us the about you. Tell us a little bit more.
Sure. We just got back. My son and I just got back from a trip in Colorado a couple days ago. And so I definitely had a lot of those short like meetings about you. And, you know, it's different depending on where you're at, how much time you have. But I've always loved the mountains. So grew up in Vermont, moved to Asheville, also spent some time in Colorado and Rwanda, which is a very mountainous country. So I've just always been drawn to mountainous landscapes and had the opportunity to work in Rwanda for about a year after I had moved to Asheville in 2009. And I think that's, you know, maybe where the seeds for Cirilla was really planted, the beverage company that I founded. Prior to that, I had quit drinking alcohol. So I was a couple years alcohol free. And so moving to Rwanda, I think that combination of like really trying to navigate the world without drugs or alcohol and living in a place where there was so much trauma, but also so much beauty and resilience and courage and survival. It was really like a great place to dive into my own healing. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, having had that experience and then coming back to Asheville, raising my son here, he's now 13. We live just north of Asheville. I'm married to a realtor here, and he has an 18-year-old son, and they're both really into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, heading into that as a career, you know, loves the fighting, the teaching, the spirituality of it all. So it's been really fun building a family here, and I definitely consider Asheville my home.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing that. I love the call of the mountains. It was, they've always called me. I'm from Depere, which people don't even know. It's
where?
Like outside Depere, Wisconsin.
Oh,
it's basically okay. A little tiny town outside of Green Bay.
Yeah.
And love my home and all, but like I moved out west a bit, Colorado, ended up South Florida, and then I've been here for 10 years myself. And I've just always had the mountains in my heart. Like didn't, you know, it wasn't anything I grew up in by any means, but they've always been in my heart and I knew I would land in the mountains. And
yeah,
of course, here I am. I love that pull. Like you've had that too. I don't know. I just
Each mountain range is like a different energy, don't you think? I mean, I was talking with my son because it was his first time out west, and he was so excited to snowboard outside, you know, out there for the first time. And I think had these, like, I guess, YouTube videos in his mind of like what he would accomplish on the snow out there, you know, and just all the tricks and everything. And then it just, it was rough. I mean, he lost his GoPro on the first day, which was devastating because that was going to be where all the videos were going to be captured. And he was going to come back and like build a whole like video streaming thing. You know, he had the vision in his mind. And then day two had like a full day lesson. Day three, we just took it off and like went to some hot springs and relaxed. And then the final day was going to be the big one, you know, and however he built it up in his 13-year-old mind, like it was going to be huge. And it was going to be like the, you know, that he was going to show me all the moves and everything. And the first run just knocked him out literally. And he was pulled down on a sled and thankfully he's fine. He didn't break anything. He didn't have a concussion, but the day was gone, you know, and then he was just in pain, like traveling back on Saturday. And the reason I say that is like, it's, you know, as a parent or just as a human, like watching, someone we love, like go through that process and not try to save them and not try to like change the experience for him, but seeing like, we had this conversation driving to the airport from Winter Park to Denver. And I'm like, these mountains, he was like, I don't want to go at the same time. You know, I was like, these mountains are different than the Blue Mountains. Like the Blue Mountains of Asheville, I feel like are very soft, like maternal. People are drawn to this area. It's like a healing ground. I feel like people come here to heal and sometimes stay and sometimes leave. Whereas I feel like the Rockies are really fierce. They're like they demand respect from you. And it's like, they'll chew you up and spit you out. Like, if you don't have that caution around them and like, but then once you get that respect, they will love you forever too. And, you know, it's just each, the Green Mountains are sort of in between where I grew up in the Vermont area. And then Rwanda's a whole nother story, but I love like the personality of mountains.
Oh my gosh. I love that, Sarah. I have never heard somebody speak to mountains. Well, even just the fact like that mountain energy, but then truly like speak to it like that. And you're right, because like we're side tangent here, but like y'all, this is like, I think this is so important in like what we're drawn to. And when you live in an environment in a place that supports you, for some people that's the beach and that's the water, and other people it's the mountains, and for some people maybe it's just back home in the Midwest or whatever that is, like country or something. But I feel like when we are at home, like at home, wherever that is for each of us, that energy, like that you were even just speaking to, the different mountain energy, even like that is, that feeds us when we're aligned like that, that we can then, okay, that's like, we don't have to worry about that and like think about moving or where is that space or where are my people? Like, everything about Asheville was like perfect for me. I like knew it was home the day I moved here, even before then. But like, there was no doubt in my mind. There was, there's never been, oh, I don't know if this is for me, if I want to leave. It's like, oh, I feel so at home. It's that's beautiful. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I think that's rare,
right? I mean, you just, when you know, you know.
Yeah.
That's how I felt when I landed in Rwanda. And it was at the same time, I think it's like, what a gift that you can land in a place and feel completely at home, where some people never, they're searching for that their whole life. And I think that like search for wanting to feel at home somewhere is more of an internal exploration. So the fact that like Asheville becomes home to so many people that are on that search, it's kind of cool. It's almost to me like, oh, you just landed within yourself at home. And Asheville was here to catch you in that process.
Yeah.
Because once you feel at home in a place, like a physical place, then I think it becomes easier to go out and explore and feel safe and at home, like wherever you go.
Oh, and two, just, this is like, so one of the concepts I teach and it like, is like about like doing you, Like, I knew when I came here, I wanted the mountains. I wanted like a family friendly type place. I wanted a community because I knew what I grew up in. And I didn't want, like, I love a big city to go visit, but I didn't want that, to live in that. So I had a checklist that, like, I knew what I wanted. And I think so many people are kind of still lost because they're doing what they think they should do, or what everybody else has, or I should have the big home, I should have the big city life, I should have all these things. And it's like, hold on, like, what do you want? And once you have that, even, like, it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, totally. It's like that with partnerships too, right?
Yeah.
We think, I mean, a lot of people go into like the dating scene with the list of like, I need this and this and this. And then, you know, it's searching through whatever the sites are and like screening people out, where it's like, when I met my husband, we were actually, it was like a magical Asheville kind of meeting at Bent Creek, which is a popular like mountain biking. And I was trail running, he was mountain biking, just both doing what we loved, you know, and single and not really looking, had been looking maybe, but in that moment, just like doing our self, right? And just like in our passion. And that's when we were brought together, like in the woods there. And it was just like, those lists kind of go out the window. It's like, oh, you just know, like you're coming home to someone else. Like that is another feeling of being at home, I think, when we meet the partner we're supposed to be with.
Oh, so good. I'm like, we could do a whole podcast on that. That actually feels like a really good segue though into like, this coming home to like what we really know. Okay, yes, got the checklist, but then there's also this just like really intuitive like landing of it. And so when you said with your business, when you even like the idea, I feel like for Cirilla was like from living in Rwanda, but also coinciding with you'd quit drinking and maybe you said something else there, quit drinking.
Yeah, I quit drinking. I mean, I think it was a struggle to discover what my social life would look like outside of that world, where alcohol was a big part of it before. And so that, like the first, I would say, you know, 5 years of being sober was, you know, it was all the things. It was beautiful. It was like, there's this pink cloud period of just feeling so good physically. A lot of people call it the pink cloud. And then sometimes that disappears, sometimes it doesn't. But for me, it was just feeling like my social life was going to be over, that I wasn't, because I had to sort of make new friends, figure out, everything was new. Everything was like a first time. It was like, okay, I'm traveling for the first time with alcohol. I'm living overseas, you know, getting married. Like everything was a first without alcohol.
Can I pause and ask something there real quick, Sarah? How old were you at this time?
So I was 28. I had just turned 28.
When you
decided when I was officially done. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I dabbled with it for probably 6 years in and out in my 20s. Yeah.
Yeah. And also curious, before even going deeper on that end of how that looked, was there something that made you choose to like, truly, you were like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to drink anymore, or I'm not going to do this anymore. Was there some pivotal moment or thing that had you, because that's, I feel like even today, that's a pretty big choice. We're now thankfully in this, like, literally, I feel like this year and like the last couple of years, where it's like, it's okay to be sober and like live alcohol free. But that's like, that's a pretty big decision. So was there
Really, I feel like it's very trendy right now. It seems to be pretty common, but I don't know. I mean, I have friends who drink. I have a lot of friends who don't, but I am like in recovery from alcoholism. So for me, it wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to try this like dry January sober curious thing. It was never like, oh, I just, you know, want it wasn't an option. I got to the point where my relationship with alcohol was so destructive. It was just, I don't know. I probably knew I had like some more time in me. Like I could keep going the way I was. I was holding some things together. Mm-hmm. But you know, the people I know who struggle in that way, it's, we're always fighting to like protect our drinking. So a lot of us like go to extremes of like being very successful on the surface or looking a certain way so that no one bothers us about our drinking because we still have some things. So it's this tension of like, it's this like dual life of like people think this, but this is really what's going on. And it's a constant feeling of, you know, back to the theme that we've developed of like feeling at home. It's a constant internal, really it becomes like self-hatred of like, I am completely denying myself. I'm denying like who I was born to be. And I'm almost like suffocating that possibility within me because of my reliance on this substance, which for me, it created behavior that like wasn't authentically me. So it's called spirits for a reason, right? It creates like a different spirit within us. And I was in denial and like fooling myself that it was bringing out like positive qualities about myself, like a sense of humor, like creativity, artistic. Like I would do all my cooking and like I'd make all my gifts like homemade, like just like, you know, the socializing part. So I didn't know how I would do any of those things without it because I thought it actually like built me up. But it was totally the opposite. So it was just letting go of that fear that, okay, I'm still going to be able to do those things that I want to do without it. And as it turns out, I could do them even better. And some of the things I just lost interest in because it was like, you know, those aren't people I really had an authentic connection with, or that's not really a project that I really care about anymore. So, and there's certain things that, you know, I guess at the end of the whole journey of struggling to like actually make the final call on being ready to quit, I kind of hit my knees and was like, you know what, I'm done. Like, yes, I could probably drink for another 10 years and maybe I'd live through it, but it's not even worth living that way anymore. You know, I never was like actively suicidal in my mind, but I think it hit me that if I continued that way, I would lose every shred of self-love and dignity that I might have left. And I also think that the main thing was I kept getting a message that I had something important in this world to do, and I was not going to be able to do it if I was still drinking. And I had the opportunity to do the Peace Corps in my early 20s after college, and I got scared. I was recruited to move to Africa, and I was still drinking, and I was like, there was something in me that knew I wouldn't be safe if I went and I was still drinking, because I put myself in really risky situations. I just didn't protect myself when I was drinking. And so I said no. And it haunted me that I had the opportunity and I didn't go. So I think that was the other seed of like, one day I want to move to Africa, but I want to be clean and sober when I do it. Because I want to be like fully 100% alive and aware of what's happening around me when I'm traveling.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for sharing all of that, Sarah. And there's like, there's so many little things that I want to like touch on. So that was like such a brave choice, I feel like, for you. And to share that for anybody listening, that whether it's them or they know someone or it's their partner, we all, I feel like, have someone in our lives that we can relate to or are going through something similar of what you went through. And even if it's not necessarily alcoholism, but it's whatever X is for each of us.
Right.
Right. Like we all have something. So I'm curious from essentially like that journey to like even the build up. And then even from the time you said, yes, I'm going to be sober, you even said like you had to transform, like you had to let go of the fear to do that. And that's a big step, but it's like, I'm curious, what are some of the tools or even support that you got to help you be able to stay sober, to make that decision and then to stay sober to where you get to now, you've now like been able to move on and live this beautiful life. But I'm sure there is like, whether it was counseling, therapy, or people just you had, or actual tangible tools, like what helped you that could help somebody else who mm-hmm. needs to know, like, there's a way out from whatever X situation you're in to like yeah. thrive.
Yeah. So I did a lot of, I'll tell you what I tried to do that didn't work because I think a lot of people fool themselves that like they're doing the work. And for me, like going back to that wanting to protect my, let's just call it like behavior of choice, right? Because it could be, yeah, it could be a lot of things. It doesn't have to be alcohol. Whatever that thing is that gets in the way of me having the kind of relationship with myself and with other people, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the indicator that it's a problem. Is it causing a problem with my relationships in general? Is it taking priority over everything else in my life? Am I obsessing over it throughout the day? Can't wait till I get the next opportunity to do whatever the thing is. And then, you know, like the most important is like my relationship with myself. So I did tons of therapy, read tons of books, did juice cleanses, exercise regimens, like everything to try to like figure out a way that I could just drink in moderation mm-hmm. and like convince myself that I was really into health and wellness, which I was. So that was like the total conflict because I really did care. Like I grew up in, you know, healthy food, like nutrition, all that stuff was important to me, but I was like drinking a toxic substance like every day to the point of, you know, blacking out quite often towards the end and just having like a lot of regret and like self-esteem issues. So honestly, like for me, it was to a point where I didn't know how to be alone without drinking. It just became like my best friend, but I had also started to isolate. And so I discovered that for me, I had to go to rehab. I had to have at least like a few weeks with uninterrupted, like someone else basically controlling like every minute of my day because I couldn't trust myself. Every day I would say, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. And it just didn't work. So I tried everything. And the thing that finally worked for me was like getting a few weeks under my belt in a place where I just didn't even have the option to drink and just throwing myself into recovery. And recovery for me was a 12-step program. And I've been going to AA for 17 and a half years. So every single day. I mean, I don't go every single day now, but I go multiple times a week. Mm-hmm. It's the number one solution for me. Mm-hmm. And most people I know who like would consider themselves alcoholic definitely turn to that program. And I'm not saying that it's the only way. But for people women I've worked with, I have a sponsor within those steps. It's like a blueprint for my life now. And it also opened up opportunities for outside help. So it helped like open, it's not that that's the only thing I do. It's my foundation. And then from that, I can go out and yes, I certainly get like therapy, you know, spirituality, like all these different modalities that are now part of my life. But I always come back to that 12-step program for me, because that's where it's a miracle. It really is a miracle for me. I don't consider myself a religious person, definitely spiritual. And, you know, I think that's sort of a block that some people have coming into that program. They think it's going to be like a God thing or a cult thing. And it's just not, you know, there's meetings all day long, almost every place in the world. And so it's really easy to like get to one. And it's just, I think part of the reason it works so well, especially in the beginning, is it's, you know, coming home once again. Like I walked into this room and was like, all these people didn't look like me. But whenever I started hearing people's stories and sharing throughout the hour-long meeting, I was like, oh my gosh, like I so belong here. There's, you know, I could be looking at like an 80-year-old man, you know, who was like maybe homeless on the street, but we have something in common. Like we all have something in common. And for me, that's the number one like important thing with recovery and healing, is just feeling like you're not alone. And you will walk into a meeting and see a sign that says you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And it's like I could go into any city tomorrow and it's like those are my people.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So what I like, again, thank you for sharing all of that. So people can know the different, one of the many ways this could look, and to even have you to know like, okay, Sarah's done this and she's still doing it, the work. And I think whether it's AA, or I think even when I think about the foundations of that, or even what you just shared, how that looks is like, basically you needed to do, and therapy, like, there needed to be inner work done. It wasn't just like, oh, I made this choice, I'm going to quit or be sober and oh, chip chop, like no more drinking like that. It's like, there was a lot of inner work and healing that had to happen. And there was different ways of receiving that support. And that's where the outer support is, like the community of AA and the support from individual people on top of the group support. There was individual support. There was also a therapist. Like there was multiple levels. And then I'm sure there was people in your personal life that were cheering you on, supporting you, helping hold you up, the new friends you made. So I think really like whatever it is for anybody, it's good to like hear what that looks like. Fit in whatever way you want to do it. Just like if somebody was going to come to coaching, it's like maybe this coaching or that coaching program or that mentor or that course is for you. But just know, like, I think too many times when any of us is going through some big transition, we want to make this big life change. We know that's where we want to be. You saw that for yourself. We see that for ourselves. I think it's really like, just in this, the way society and culture works, we're like, all right, sign me up for the course. I'm going to do the 12 weeks or the diet for the 3 months, and then chip chop, I'm good to go. And it's like, and that's just one thing. It's like one book. There's no extra support, right? Or maybe there's a little support, but like it looks what you said. There is inner work that needs to be done from old stories, past beliefs, healing wounds, all of that in a bag of potato chips. Like there needs to be that. There needs to be the community. There needs to be some one-on-one support on top of your friends and family. And then it doesn't end. It's not like
it never ends. It's just like, one layer. It's a layer after layer.
And I think when people have this outlook of like, well, I'll just lose the weight, or I'll quit drinking for this amount of time, or I'll build the business and make the $1 million. And then, I mean, I'm all set, like, you know, or I'll get married and have the kid. And then it's like, well, okay. And it's like all of these things in our life, whatever it is you're working on or you want, like it's a journey, a lifetime journey. And the more you can have the tools and support, and it may look like different things in different seasons. Like you said, now you go not every day, but multiple times a week. It's shifted a little bit. It may shift for us who we're working with or what we're doing, but you always need to have that support if you want to continue to maintain the results and the life that you have.
Well, yeah. And I feel like we might be able to certainly pick up tools from other people, but we create our own blueprint for what works for us. And it's probably going to be a combination of things. We've got a big toolbox. Like, I mean, that's where when I first started in recovery, I didn't have any tools. So it was just like, all right, one tool at a time and just building. And the more tools we have, like, through that's why I love the one day at a time approach, because it's, you know, it does require discipline. Look, I don't think having an addiction or substance abuse issue, that's to me not a discipline issue. People who think that are misunderstanding. It's really not. But when it comes to like building a regime around recovery or sobriety or whatever the health and wellness goals are, that definitely requires discipline, you know, just to stay true to like I think through my day. Like yesterday morning, you know, I did go to a meeting first thing. I didn't really want to. Like today I went for a run. I didn't really want to, but like I think through, what do I need to do? Or I know what I need to do to like stack like a positive day ahead of me. Like I don't know what's going to happen today exactly. Things are going to come at me, but I know what I can do to like be probably have like a better outcome. And I'd rather kind of do those things early on. If I get my meeting, get my run, get my, you know, cooking done, like my quality time with my son, like there's just different things that, then when the like, you know, what comes in, which it will, I'm going to be that much more stabilized, you know, and regulated to handle it. And I just think that's a good kind of outlook for each day. We talk about, so I kind of like people who do a 30-day cleanse or like a dry January type thing. I respect whatever it takes for each person. If it's just to kind of like lose 5 pounds or get into the dress or like just do like a reset. But I think the deeper reason is probably like someone's wondering if they have an issue, whether it's with food or alcohol or, and I think that 30 days or whatever, how many days can really be telling, like, how did it feel? You know, was I white knuckling? Was I just like counting down the days until I could have X, Y, and Z? And in, you know, to me, that means there is a deeper issue there that needs to be addressed if they want to, like, if they want to, I mean, no one, it's their decision, but like putting down the drink or whatever the behavior is only the first step. Like, that's not actually the problem. The problem wasn't my drinking. The problem was like that I was using it to cope with the other issues. And so when I got rid of that, what am I left with? The other issues. And that's when the work begins, and it's freaking scary. You know, it's really scary not to have the sugar, the this, and just sit with it. And I guess that's where like the outside help and community comes in, because we don't have to sit in it, you know, just without a solution. So that's going to be painful. That's going to be kind of feel hopeless. And that's where people probably don't sustainably create change, because they haven't laid out a plan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love that you said there, it's like, we have to actually solve for the problems that are like actually going on in our lives, like the stress, the feelings of whatever your relationship, whatever is causing you the feelings that then we reach for the drink or we reach for the food for. And that's the hard work right there, is really solving for that. And so actually I kind of like from that, this feels like a good transition even. So like you quit drinking and you then moved to Rwanda at that time or shortly after?
A couple years. Yeah, I was told not to make any big life decisions in that first year. So I think I waited like a year and a half or two.
And then It was in Rwanda when you first got the Sparks idea of Cirilla, or tell us kind of
not then what... exactly. Yeah. Not exactly. I mean, I was running a restaurant there, and I really fell in love with like a lot of the products that were, a lot of the things that were being grown there. It's just, it's a, first of all, just a beautiful, peaceful place today. It's, covered with farms, like people growing just incredible food. And my first love is coffee. And I just like Rwandan coffee is, has a special place in my heart. And then I discovered the tea, and I had kind of grown up with like herbal tea in a bag, or, you know, I think my first tea I ever had was like a, probably more of like a powder black in a very flat tea bag. It was called Red Rose. My aunt used to drink it, and she'd get a box of Red Rose tea, and a little China animal would come in it. And I just love that she would give me the little collectibles. And then we would just dump like milk and sugar into that tea when I was little. So those were kind of my experiences with tea. And so discovering like premium loose leaf tea in Rwanda was really, really cool. I couldn't believe that I had never had it before. I had never seen it on menus. I didn't even know tea grew in Rwanda. And my favorite was the silver needles tea. So it's a type of white tea. And it's really rare. You don't find it in stores much at all. But you can find it in places like Dobro Tea now. Most silver needles come from China. So I was excited to find that. I felt really good drinking it. Like back, you know, when I moved back to Asheville, fast forward a few years, I started to import like small quantities of the tea, and just thought like, how can I make an impact and kind of help shine a light on Rwanda as a producer of such incredible products, and hopefully make an economic impact with the people that I met when I was living there. So I started with the loose leaf tea, and then just started playing around with that in my house. And I would be sipping on the silver needles all summer, and just, I'd do a cold steep, and it was so good. I felt like energized and focused, and it just tastes so clean. And I would say the idea of making a positive impact in the world was probably the primary motivation. It's also part of my recovery, is like this, it's a full circle healing when we can be of service to other people at the same time as focusing on ourselves. It's a balance, but that model is like really, really rewarding in my life. I feel kind of honestly empty, like if I'm not doing something impactful. Like I've never been motivated just by money. I tried that, and I kind of wish like I felt that, you know, that was enough, because I feel like it'd be simpler in a way. That might be a weird thing to say, but like my first job out of college was, I was training as a financial consultant, like stockbroker in Boston. And I just was like, ugh. I mean, it was just like a really, really dark time in my life. And I like forced myself to do that. I thought that would be a good career move for me, that like eventually, you know, I could do good things with the money, but I just couldn't stick with it. And so I think, you know, with Cirilla, the motivation first was like making an impact to help hopefully build like a better supply chain model. And then also ultimately to help people in the US who are struggling with not feeling part of the social scene if they're not drinking. Even if they just don't want to drink for a night, you know, what are you going to have? Like it's changed a little bit, but it still seems to be really hard to find something besides a soda or water, or, you know, you get like a mocktail menu and it's typically like sugar and juice, or it's basically the cocktail with the alcohol not in it. It just doesn't taste good. It's a lot of calories. It's a lot of sugar. And we deserve better. You know, those were my motivations behind building it. And then, you know, I would say the reality has hit me hard. I'm in a kind of a tough spot now, just with trying to maintain that social impact desire and like really wanting to make a difference with the reality of building a beverage company and how like it's so tough and it's like so expensive and the margins are thin. And I would say it's, it just feels a little heavy right now. I haven't even shared that with anyone publicly. It's just like, I'm in the weeds of like the administration part of it, you know, and we're doing okay. I mean, I'm like five years in, but, and we've made it, you know, but it's not where I thought it would be. It's not like, we're not so profitable that I can start making a big impact economically or otherwise. So it's kind of, it's an interesting place to be in of like, okay, I need to come back to like the anchor every day and why I'm doing this, because otherwise, like, I think that's where a lot of, I hear this with creatives too, you know, they start a business because they love the thing they're creating. And then they realize it's, you know, the work that they have to do every day to keep it growing is not what they expected. So it's been interesting.
Oh my gosh, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing that. I feel like, first of all, I am like, oh man, y'all, I say this sometimes a lot on this, but I'm like, rewind that, or just like, take a moment for yourself. If you're walking, when you're listening to this, if you're in the car, just like pause, take that in. Because what you just shared, I think, I mean, I want to go back to like the purpose part about it too, but like here you are in like, you've made it. I mean, if anyone were to look you up and see Cirilla Drinks and Beverages, and I see you on LinkedIn all the time, like in like doing what you're doing, on the surface, like the iceberg, it looks like things are great. We are, and they are, but like at the same time, still in the weeds, still not where you want to be or where you thought it would be 5 years in. Amen. And that like, y'all, this is like, I feel like this is the part of the journey in business or in life that it's like, same thing with the diet or the exercise. It's like people are just throwing shit at the wall and trying to do all the things or go from one thing to the next. And then they quit and then they start and then they quit and then they start. And you're wondering why you're still of the same exact life and results you do 3 or 5 years later. And it's like, you could go through the hard in that way, or you can go through the hard and like what you're doing. And it's like going after something you're purposeful and you're feeling called to, and is like lights you up. Jet right in general versus the soul sucking job or relationship or whatever or weight that holds us all back. But it's like, it still takes work, and it's, there's still gonna be freaking life hitting you. There's gonna be something that happens that comes out of the blue, or you're not where you want to be. And it's not about quitting. It's about this is what grows us and what makes, I feel like, the overnight success stories you see in 10 years, like probably 5 years from now when we chat on the interview.
Like, oh, she just flew up overnight.
Yeah, right. Like, oh my God, Cirilla, it's in all the bars and restaurants. Yeah. And it's like, but if you were not willing to go through this, the weeds right now and have hard, challenging times, you would not get there. None of us would quote unquote get there. And so I just really appreciate you sharing that. And for people to really hear, like, life is challenging, whether you're going after the big dreams and goals. And I know this too, from like my business even, or you're playing it safe and small and you're like not living the life of your dreams and it sucks in that way. And you're like, oh God, I wish I had the beverage company I dream about. Right. And it's like, okay, like this is real deal. And I love that you shared too, like that you've got to anchor it every day right now. And I think everyone could use that like as a tool in your toolbox, is like anchor to your why, to your mission, whatever that is for each of us. If it's, you know, you want to have that best body, or somebody wants to run the race, or somebody wants to build their own business, like you're at some point or another, whatever the big dream and goal is, you're going to have to anchor the fuck in
Oh, so we can swear. I've been holding back.
Yeah. Yeah, you go for it, Sarah.
All right, I was just waiting for you first.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually drop some bombs, but that just hit. It's like,
yeah,
man, it's going to be hard at some point or another. And you need to be able to anchor in. And I think the more we can do that, just like you right now, it's like that's how you then take those next steps.
It does feel like trudging sometimes. It's not going to be all, you know, I'm thinking, I have this memory. I think my husband and I were still just dating. It might've been like in the first year. I remember taking a walk with him. I remember exactly where we were in North Asheville, and we were still getting to know each other. And I was talking about the different like things I'd started with work and all the things I was doing. I guess I would like say a serial entrepreneur. And he said something like, it sounds like you're really good at starting things. How are you at like finishing them or something? It wasn't finishing, but I think he said, it sounds like you're really good at starting things. And I realized it was sort of a roundabout question. He wanted to know, do we have like a long-term opportunity here in our relationship? Mm. And so he was kind of trying to understand me as a person. Could I stay with something / someone, right? And I know. And it was like, it almost felt like a challenge. And I was like, game on. Like, yeah, I can definitely stay with something. And here we go. Like I had just kind of started. Mm. I hadn't started Cirilla, but my company is called Three Mountains. And that was like already set up to do some of the tea. So I was like, that stuck with me. I'm like, I'm going to do this, you know, and I know it's not going to be easy. It's, you know, not, I don't know, like today's a Monday and I'm used to being like really fired up on a Monday, but it's not like, it doesn't have to be all fired up. It doesn't have to be like all joyful. I mean, I think we have to look for the joy and the miracles each day so that we don't burn out. But I also heard someone in business I really respect who's building a CPG brand as well and said, you know what, the days when the days start feeling kind of boring, that means you're freaking doing it right. Because it actually means you've created the systems and like things are humming along. Mm-hmm. And it might, as an entrepreneur, it might feel boring, but do not leave during that. Like when you have that, like hold on to it, because that's when you might be like about to get a freaking really rich, to be honest. Like that's when the money starts flowing in, because like everything's established. And unfortunately, you know, there's kind of this, there's like a flow chart of an entrepreneur's journey. And I think at first it gets real steep. It's like a high, you know, it's kind of this like high of building something new. And then maybe, so that's like step one to step two, and then it comes down. And some people consider that like the valley of death. Like it comes down, maybe step three, between three and four is when a lot of people bail. And that's usually within the first few years. But right after that, like deep dip, and it starts to come back up, that's sometimes when we have to find that optimism again around our business. It's called informed optimism. So the first part is naive optimism, which is beautiful. Like we don't even know what we don't know. It's great. Anything's possible. And then we freaking know what we don't know. And it's like, can be really depressing and scary. And then we come into that informed optimism, hopefully, but a lot of people don't make it to that point. And that's also when this sort of like boring feeling can set in. And that'll change too. You know, it's just that'll pass as well. Cause then, you know, the beauty of that is we have this safety where we can then start building new things within our business. Like it is the same business, but like I can create new partnerships, new flavors, new activations, events. Like sky is the limit. I mean, it's not like it just stops. Like, as you said before, the growth can continue indefinitely. So it's just getting through those stages and trusting like it could just be right around the corner when that next stage hits. Like we don't know if it's going to be turning the page tonight or, you know, maybe it's another 2 years. I don't know.
Yeah. I love that in that way. And it makes me just like, even when I'm thinking about, well, first of all, so true for entrepreneurship or like a business, even in somebody's career, quite honestly, right? Mm-hmm. Or relationship, whatever relationship. It is. And I think like even what comes up for me there when I'm thinking about like training is like, I know I'm going to work out like 4 out of the 7 days out of the week is like my minimum like level workout schedule. And there's going to be running and lifting within that. But because I have that like consistency or like systems in place, the tools that I use to keep that, I have playroom and creative room within that system of quote unquote could be boring, meaning like I could do weighted vest work for my speed work if I wanted. I could play soccer, which I'm going to do this spring or summer for speed work. I could do the stairs. Like I have different things I can do within speed work. I have different exactly. things that I can do within lifting that allows it to still be fun. It just like you were saying, like there's different variations within the system. So I think that's really good to hear. And mm-hmm. that like too many people get stuck and stop in the boring, or once you have the system in place, it's like, oh, like great. Got the marriage, got the relationship. Like now it's getting boring. It's like, okay, we'll stop going to the movies every Friday and maybe yeah. do something different.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So good. Okay. We are like already almost at an hour and we have yeah. like barely, I feel like touched. One thing I just wanted to point out before like even moving on from that is like, I just really want people to hear and see too, like your journey into recovery in that, and still is like you found, and even your job and career and satisfaction in life, you found purpose and you started to do what you wanted to do, what resonated with how you can't operate with just making the money. Like mm-hmm. some people can, you couldn't. Like, I just really love that, because I really want people to start to like own and see, like do what you want to do. Like mm-hmm. the dreams that are on your heart and head, how you operate and work. Sorry to start owning that shit. Like right. instead of pretending we should do this or we have to do that, or I can never do that. It's like, Sarah is showing y'all right now, there, like when you link into your purpose and alignment and what works for you, yeah, is the journey still tough and challenging? Absolutely. But is it way more satisfying, and you're not like sucking your soul away? Like, and that affects every area of your life? Yes. Yes. So find purpose. And I think that mm-hmm. also helps somebody in recovery, or I always tell people that in like, health and weight loss. It's like, I've never had to like worry about counting calories or macros or that, because I've always had bigger fucking shit going on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just thinking about how do I lose 10 pounds or 20 pounds like after the baby. I was like, I'm focused on running an ultra marathon and building a business. So like, I ain't got time to like think about the nitty gritty. And mm-hmm. I think when we have that purpose, it really just fuels us so much more to stop thinking about the day to day. How do I survive type thing?
True. Yeah. I mean, I think the bottom line is people want to feel safe, and right. So it's if we're in, I guess what's, you know, there's the layers of the onion. I do believe like we're only shown what we can handle. Mm-hmm. at the time. So if we're being shown a lesson or something, like you get to either deal with it now or deal with it later. Right. And it's like, I choose now. I choose like, let's not delay this anymore, because I know now I need to go through it, not around it. I mean, I can go around it, but I'm going to have to go around and around and around. And that's just like, again, going back to like, if we are choosing things in our day to build self-esteem and build, you know, that'll hopefully lead to self-love. And then we'll have more trust for ourselves. And then that'll give us courage to do the things that do feel scary, but we know like we're safe, and this is getting cheesy, but like we're at home within ourselves, you know, we can carry forward like into whatever that risky thing is. And something else that helps me is like, if I'm in a lot of fear, anxiety, which is pretty common, I try to just not like linger too long in this, but think what's the worst case scenario and let myself go there just for a second and then leave. Like, don't hang out in there, but like just to realize it's, you know, usually my fears are, it's actually not that bad. And it usually doesn't come to happen. Sometimes it does. I mean, we've all had like a lot of terrible things happen, I'm sure. Like, but most of them couldn't have been predicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I feel like there was like some quotes in there we're going to like dig out. Okay. So Sarah, do you have like maybe like 10 more minutes? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So we found out how you wanted to start Cirilla and where that came from. Give us like the Cliff Notes version then. It's probably a whole other episode, but like you started then, you were like, okay, this beautiful, amazing tea, you found like the purpose in it and the passion in it. Like, tell us about kind of like starting the company to like where you are now. And
in 5 minutes.
You can take as much time as you want. Yeah. I'm not going to like pause you, stop you.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of give us that journey from then to where you are now.
Yeah. So I did start out with a few ideas. I joined the Venture Asheville program here, which really supports startup founders. And it's a program of the chamber here in Asheville. So I joined Elevate and I was assigned a few mentors that I would meet with every month. So that really helped. And the first thing that they had me do was to focus and choose. Like, there was also someone in the community here who really made a difference in my life. His name is Damian Hoffman. And like, just, he knew the work I was doing in Rwanda and sat down with me a couple of times. And I had so many ideas. I had like, it was like baskets, jewelry, coffee, fabrics, maybe tea, but it was like just so many ideas. It was products coming out of Rwanda. And so between him and these mentors, they just, it was a painful process because I had to pick something to focus on. It was like, what are you going to start with? You can always add to it after, you know, and I just like threw down a bunch of product ideas. And so that was like a narrowing down process. And I think how I ultimately got to the tea and then eventually to the liquid form of the tea was, it was a combination of like heart and head, right? So like looking at what's the market opportunity, what's the market size, what's trending right now? Like, tea is fitting in nicely with health and wellness and a growing interest in premium tea, not just tea bags, you know, also seeing like the sustainability part of it, like the environmental component of tea and how it's providing year-round income for farmers, whereas coffee definitely isn't. And so looking at those different factors that played into my mission I was on, and then ultimately just being like really passionate about drinking, I think because of my background with like just being obsessed with beverages in general, like loving having something in my mouth, you know, the liquid, the mouthfeel, there's so much more to a beverage than just the flavor. The mouthfeel is hugely important. So I took that cold steep silver needle tea I was sipping on all summer. And I'm like, there's something to this. Like, this is my hero ingredient. Like, this is just, it started like sparking a lot of passion within me. And I'm like, I need to do something with this ingredient. It feels like a really magical thing. And I just couldn't understand why I wasn't seeing it anywhere else. And I kind of felt like I had discovered this ingredient that no one was talking about. So I met someone who motivated me to maybe take it to like a manufacturer, or maybe like look around Asheville and see if there was someone that could help me scale it out of my kitchen and just play around with it. I talked to a cafe and they were doing like some tea kegs, which I thought was really cool. So I got the idea like maybe we could actually keg this. We were playing around with a nitro tea recipe, which I still have on the back burner. And then I thought, oh, like, maybe we could carbonate this. Maybe we could create a system like you make beer, but without the fermentation. So I essentially created a standard operating procedure that was very much like brewing beer, but without that fermentation tank. And I figure, like, I'm in the land of breweries. Like, I'm sure I can find someone here to help me make this. So I went to the Southeast Beverage Institute in Candler and studied under that director for some time, and then took what we had created there to Ginger's Revenge. And I did my first tank, a very small tank there, and just sampled out my first kegs at their opening party. So that was like before I started the business officially, but I was just sampling the product, and probably spent the next year like doing some events, some festivals, selling to like a few breweries, still had a job on the side, didn't quite like, wasn't full-time yet. But I just generated the interest and did a lot of market research during that time.
Can I pause real quick here, Sarah? So real quick, from like the time you got, you had like all the ideas, it was like to bringing it down to one. I don't know if that was like literally a month time frame or if that was 6 months.
Like 2 years.
That was 2 years. Okay. Yeah.
It probably took me 2 years
to like fully be like, okay, this is the one we're going to go.
Cirilla ready to go. Yeah.
And then from there, you're like, okay, now we're doing this. Let me talk to the manufacturers and these, let's try these different things. Like, when was that? So 2 years you chose it, you decided on this to then like that first batch coming out.
Yeah. Well, it was probably like a good year, year and a half of like kind of, I was selling the loose leaf tea during that time. And so I was working a lot with the ingredient, but I didn't have a canned product. And then I was kegging. And then was just thinking, this is going to be a draft product. You know, I wasn't really thinking of like bottling. But then, you know, I did learn more about the beverage industry. I started looking at like the data behind draft versus bottles. And it was tough to get tap space. Mm-hmm. It was tough to get that real estate. And, you know, the director of the Southeast Beverage Institute is like, you know what, if you had this in cans, you know how easy it would be to just like sell a case here and there. And you just, it's a different process, and it's going to be, it's a volume game. Like, you've got to just get it out there in stores and get that presence known. And so then I was tasked with identifying like who's going to manufacture this for me. And that was probably like, the end of 2018, I started looking for that production partner because I didn't want to build my own facility, and I would not recommend that to anyone. So I knew I needed the facility to partner with, went all the way to California looking, tried to keep it local, but there's a big difference between producing beer and producing a shelf-stable non-alcoholic beverage, because the alcohol actually maintains the integrity of the product. So if you don't have the alcohol, you need to do something else. And I didn't want to use like preservatives. So I wanted to keep it in its natural state and keep it organic and everything. And I searched high and low for that co-manufacturer and finally found them. And it was like, it was crazy because it was March 2020. We had gotten into our first grocery store 6 months prior. So I was producing the cans for that grocery store in a local brewery, but it was like not sustainable. It was going to be really hard to scale in that facility. And so it was just kind of one of those like one door closes, another one opens. And I was like, I really didn't want to deal with that move and like finding a facility. But March 2020 hit, the brewery shut down. I had nowhere to produce, and I had already kind of found this co-packer that I needed to work with. So we got started around that time, like on a larger scale. So that's officially when I started producing, I'd say two flavors. It was an old package. It was, the brand name was Silverback, named after the gorillas in Rwanda. I've since rebranded, changed the label, changed the name, added four more flavors. And, you know, it was a tough time to try to get, like, we were going to do sampling and events and bars, and all that stuff was not an option. So the first 2 years, it was just kind of, all right, we're going to ship this out to the stores, and we're going to hope, you know, we're going to do some marketing online, but we're going to hope people just are motivated to try it. And it was tough. It was a tough time to launch because, I mean, people were just getting what they knew for the most part, not spending a lot of time in stores, a lot of delivery services, a lot of just like getting comfort food and staples. A lot of people were either drinking to excess at home, you know, like really turning to whatever those behaviors were to comfort them. But I also know a lot of people like just hit like a wall or kind of hit like a bottom with that stuff and actually turned it around during that time. Some people got sober. Some people got really healthy, started working out. You know, there are different, definitely different experiences, but we came through that and launched into a couple of national distributors, maybe 2 years ago. So there was like 20, did all the things like big trade shows, hired brokers. And now we're kind of in a place where the past 2 years has been a period of like really learning more from our customers. Like what are you looking for? How do we fit into your life? How can we start building more of a digital presence so that we can connect directly with the people who are purchasing Cirilla? Because one of the challenges in grocery is it becomes so far removed from the people buying, because we're not even selling to the grocery store. We're selling to like a distributor and they sell to the store and the store sells to, so it's just hard to know them. So I'm kind of pulling back into, not back, but just redesigning our system that we are going to be doing more direct to consumer, more engagement online, more back in food service. So we're working on hospitality, college campuses, corporate campuses, hotels, fitness, and like travel retail. So where people are, you know, whether it's airports or hotels, grab and go type places. It's called vending, not exactly vending machine. We do some vending machines, but, and just kind of stepping away a little bit from grocery. We'll still be selling in stores, but I've learned how expensive it is, like how much big brands are actually spending each year on marketing just to be in the store, just to hold on to their position in the store. Because just getting in the store is one thing, but actually selling through, like the number of units you need to sell through each week to stay in the store, is very difficult. So it can be done in like local stores or where people know you, but to launch into like nationwide grocery stores, it costs millions and millions of dollars. So that's kind of where we're at, is just facing the reality of like, again, it's that informed optimism I'm in now. It's like, now I know what it costs to compete with all the Coke and Pepsi brands that have hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's very exciting that we would even be considered like in that competitive set, but we are being compared to those numbers. So I'm just trying to grow this year with that realistic kind of outlook in mind, and like where can we win with the resources we have?
I like that right there. Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing that full story. And so that even is like, so essentially your journey started, what am I, if I'm counting, I'm like thinking, adding up the years, 2 years.
It started like, it probably started, I can't even say the year, because it probably started like sometime in my early 20s. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to pinpoint when a journey begins, and I can't say how many years I've been building it. It's not easy to answer, but I mean, some entrepreneurs will say like the year that they went full time on something is kind of when it started, but I don't know. I mean, well, and then it's like, how many iterations of the products did we do until we got to what we have today? But I think the purpose is to just show people it can take time. It's a journey, right? And like, it's there's going to be iterations. It's like constant tinkering. It's constant tinkering with like what we're creating and label adjustments and consumer insights. And, you know, I follow a lot of brands, and some really big brands that I would say apparently are very successful and I respect would be like I think Vital Proteins is one where they created this product for a target audience that they were marketing to for years. And then I don't know how many data points came in where they realized that wasn't even the person buying it. Like the person buying it was like different age, different gender, you know, and that's when they kind of revamped like the label and the look and the positioning and the marketing and just blew up. You know, it can take like Celsius, they hit $1 billion last year and they are everywhere on college campuses now. And that brand, man, like their story, whether you like it or not, you know, I'm not saying I don't drink it, but it's like a fascinating story. When they started, I think almost 20 years ago, could not figure it out. You know, they were marketing that drink to truckers to keep them awake at night. They positioned it with 5-hour energy and like could not figure out who their consumer was, you know, and that's why product market fit is so important with what we're doing. But it doesn't usually happen overnight. And the sad thing is, you know, a lot of great brands with great missions and great founders don't have the time to like go that long. I mean, I don't know how Celsius bought, you know, 10 or 15 years until they figured out the financial success model. But a lot of people don't have the money to just, you know, take that long to figure it out and wait for that product market fit. So I think that's the critical decision of where can you win with the resources you have right now? And then you can continue to iterate and try to reach new people, but to really focus on break even and profitability as soon as you can, because a lot of food and beverage brands don't even reach profitability until, you know, sometimes never. And it takes, you know, they're just dumping money into it that entire time.
Mm.
So how much money and time does it take to get to $1 billion? That's kind of a big question mark. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I have like, I'm like, side note, I have so many ideas and thoughts. I'm like, we might need to like power brainstorm session after this. But I'm okay. This is so good. I just love sharing like really what the journey freaking looks like. And whatever that is, when you have, I always say like that big goal on your heart and head. This is Cirilla. This has been the big goal on your heart and head that you're just putting all this time, effort, and energy into. And like when y'all follow Sarah, like you will see like this woman is out there, like working her booty off and having fun, but like it's doing the work too, that it's like, don't even know, you know, we don't even, there's not like, it's not like when you're like going for a job and you're like, well, if I work really hard and I ask for a raise, I could get $5,000 and I'll make X amount of dollars a year. It's like, no. You don't know. Nobody knows when you're an entrepreneur and a business owner what that's going to look like. So it's not, it's only guaranteed to what you just keep going. I think two kind of big questions come up that I think would really, I feel like, inspire and help anyone on their journey from your journey and from your story. And that is, what would you say to somebody who, I want to go like both spectrums. One, like who has that goal on their heart and head for whatever it is. Like, what would you say to somebody who's there, but they're afraid, they're not taking the leap, or maybe they've started a few times and yet they're not going to the finish line, but they know it keeps coming back to them and hitting them at home. Oh gosh, it's doing that thing. Okay. And then the other one is more of like where you're at. We're like somebody who has started the thing. They've started the business. They've started the working out, whatever it is, their goal, but they're in the weeds. They're like the 2 to 3 to 5 years deep, not where they want to be yet. So what would you tell them also, like both ends of the spectrum? So I'd love to hear.
Yeah. Well, I'll go with the second one first, because this just came to my mind, is I heard someone say one time, always remember you might only be 11 steps away from what you want. And that stuck with me. Imagine if you're feeling like you're in the weeds, like a little hopeless, like this isn't going the way you want. Like, but imagine if someone told you they could see a crystal ball and they're like, no, you're exactly where you need to be right now. And you're only 11 feet away from what you've been working towards. Would you give up right now? So that's the one for the second person. And then the one who's like trying to take the leap or deciding, I think the first thing I would check in on is like, what's holding you back? And you can't say fear, because that's for everyone. But like, what's the actual thing? Is it a self-preservation thing? And I guess I'm going to go to the behavior part, because is there a behavior in your life that's getting in the way of you taking this step? And I think there's often a behavior that we know we have to let go of, or we have to transmute in some way in order to trust ourselves. And so the big issue with not taking the first step is we don't fully trust ourselves. And for me, I had to stop drinking, because when I was drinking, I didn't trust what I would do. Like, once I picked up a drink, it was game on. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know how the night was going to go. It might be okay. It might not be okay. So I had to let go of that behavior. And then there were other things I had to do, you know, to get to that self-trust. But if we're going to go out into the world and do our thing, do our dream, like, we better damn well be able to trust ourselves. So that's the first part.
Oh, I love that answer, Sarah. Honestly, like, when I think about that, even for me and my journey, I feel like this has been, the last 6 months has been more of this intuition, spirituality, like more of like truly trusting myself, like, and owning that I do have the answers and I know. And instead of all the strategy and things, and like, yes, we need some guidelines, but, and the more you start to own that and have that, it's like, the more I do have my own back, and the more powerful and confident I can show up and be more of me and share my gifts with the world and do the things I want to do. But I think that's a really beautiful place for anyone to start, is with self-trust. Okay. I love both of those. Okay. I know we're like way over here. I was like, anything like from your entrepreneurial journey, from your journey overall, like where, from where you are to like where you are now today, like any like really big lessons or things that stand out to you that we didn't talk about that you really would love to share with anybody?
You know, something that comes up for me sometimes is this becomes like, it starts to feel really serious a lot of the time, like building a business. And it does sometimes feel like a life or death thing, which it's not. I mean, it's really not. Like, it's important work, but to make sure we don't make it our higher power, like to make sure we don't make our business our higher power, because that is also a lesson from recovery for me, is like, I, you know, made alcohol my higher power. People can make a relationship their higher power, or whatever the thing is, like, that becomes really dangerous, because it means that it becomes priority over everything else in our life. And it starts to like guide everything we do. And so for me, it's like, it's not getting too far away from my spiritual practices where I can remember like what this is all about. I mean, yeah, I love building things. Like, I absolutely love, like, you know, even when I am in the weeds, I absolutely love this business. That's true. I do. And I'm glad for the reminder and to be able to have this conversation. 'Cause some days, you know, it does feel like heavy, but the relationships that we have in our life and making sure that we're choosing the right people around us to support our dreams. And I'm not saying cheerleaders, because I think like in the very beginning, it is important to have people around who are like, you know, like, you got this, like, you can do anything. But that's not, you know, I'm in a stage now where I do need that kind of support at home. Like my husband doesn't need to be like cheerleading for me, but I do need to know that I can like have a grounded, safe, you know, relaxing place to be at home, but that there's also people in my life who are gonna tell me the truth, you know. And that was, you know, I'll shout out to like Bob Russell, who's my brand advisor, and my business coach, Dorothy Andreas. I have people like that in my corner, and they will tell me the truth. I have a sponsor in AA who knows everything about me, you know, and so building that community in different areas of our life where we do let at least a couple people know everything about us, and that we have at least someone who we've shared our secrets with, you know, because we're only as sick as our secrets. And to know that you're not alone, and that if you've been through it, someone else has been through it too.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so good. Kind of like going even like a little full circle there, like going back to the support.
Yeah.
The levels of support that we need, and just you like sharing what some like all of those levels look like. It's a team. It really, just like raising a kid, it takes a village to raise the business baby. So I love that. And I think that alone, super powerful. Like even if you don't have, you know, all the strategy in the world and have all the answers for the things in your business, like having the support allows you to stay. I always think about like a highway, like you stay on the highway, or if you get off, you get back on. You're not getting lost in the desert somewhere.
That's true. Yeah. And I mean, I guess like time isn't, it doesn't have to be linear, right? We might be weaving, but like stay on course. We don't know like what that course is going to look like, but there's a lot of pressure in this society about that straight line path and that hockey stick growth. It's all linear. And even our like, you know, schedule throughout the day is linear, but in communities like Rwanda, which I love so much, it's not circular, it's spiral, it's around and upside down, and like, you know, it's about this moment right now and turning it over to higher power to like trust that the next step will be revealed to us. And if we think we're in charge of all of it, then we're in trouble, because like that's our ego getting in the way of something that could be even better than what we imagined.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Oh, so good. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing all of this. This is so amazing. Please tell people where they can find you, all the places they can find you. You guys are definitely going to want to follow Sarah. And try Cirilla. Tell us some places nationally, locally, that you can also grab a Cirilla.
Yeah, definitely try Cirilla. We have a sampler pack on our website if you just want to figure out what your favorite flavor is. And then you can buy a full case or start supporting the local store that carries us. We always try to bring new consumers into the stores as like a thank you for them believing in us. But our website is drinkcirilla.com. And if you send a message to us either on the website or Instagram, I will probably be at least one of the people checking that. Our Instagram is at drinkcirilla. We're also working on building a TikTok presence. We could definitely use the love over there. It's not easy. And I'm pretty active, as you know, on LinkedIn. So you can find me, Sarah Stender Delaney, on LinkedIn. I check all my messages there. I post almost every day. Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, and then our website. We have 6 flavors. We just came out with our first Cause collab. So it's a 7th flavor limited time offer. It's our first flavor with hops. So it's called Hoppy Hibiscus. I'm really excited. We're donating 5% to a nonprofit called Pink Boots Society, which supports women in brewing. And that's coming out this month. So around Asheville, we're in a lot of different places. I would say our main grocery store here is Earth Fair. We're also in Harris Teeter, all the way out to basically most of North Carolina. But we're sold in many parts of the country. So just go to our website and go to the store finder, put in your zip code, and we're also on Amazon.
Amazing. Okay, good. So can get it all the places.
And if anyone listening is a business owner, if you're a store owner or a restaurant, hotel, bar, we can also, we service nationwide direct. So if you send us a message, we're not in your local distributor yet. We can ship direct, but we also may be available in your distributor. So we'd love to talk to you.
Amazing. So good. Oh, Sarah, thank you so much for being
thank
on.
Thank you.
Can't wait to share this with everyone.
Yeah, this has been great. Thanks, Samantha. Hope to see you soon in the person.
Yes.
In real life.
We will.
All right. Thank you.